may or may not know that before this podcast, I hosted another one called STEM, Insider Tips for Greenhouse Pros, and although the technology I used was different, the topics were important and the guests were top-notch. I'm your host, Bill Calkins, and once every couple weeks, I'm going to jump back in time and re-release a STEM episode. In this Tech On Demand podcast rewind, we go back about 6 years to an early episode I recorded with Dr. Will Healy. This time, our topic was watering and irrigation management, and it was a two-part series. This episode and the previous one, The Language of Watering, work best in tandem, so try to listen to the first part before jumping into this one. In the first part, Dr. Healy delved into the importance of speaking the same language of watering throughout your entire company and the qualitative and quantitative ways to teach water management so accuracy and efficiency can be achieved. This episode, part two, takes it to the next level, getting into specific plant demands, how to determine wet and dry targets, how to optimize any greenhouse for water management, and even suggests an inexpensive gift for all of your production team members. Get ready to rewind and listen to Watering, the rest of the story. In our previous episode with Dr. Will Healy, we spent 40 minutes or so defining the language of watering and going over, I guess, what I would consider a 101 level horticultural course on water management, truly for the waterer, the person holding the hose. And we talked about Will's five levels of watering, some common challenges to overcome, effects of poor watering, which was critical, and we got into a little bit about who on the team across your organization needs to learn the language and why. So be sure to listen to the Language of Watering episode before jumping into this one, because they definitely work best in tandem. This one does get much more technical and is really targeting and designed for the management level, the folks that are sort of instructing the people that are doing the day-to-day watering. And you'll find a link to the previous episode in the show notes. So, Will, welcome back to STEM.
Well, thank you very much for having me talk about one of the topics that I really find to be the most interesting. Of course, that's why I talk about it, but also because it's so critical to the business. You know, when we think about watering, it really impacts so much of what we're doing that you really want to understand it and take it apart from a technical standpoint, but also an operational standpoint.
So when I talk about sort of the two different audiences for these two different episodes, there's a person that's actually doing the day-to-day watering, and then there's the person who's making the decisions to instruct that person. Am I getting that right?
Correct. Yeah, because when you think about the watering process from beginning to end and its impact in plant growth, it's really, we talked about it as the watering pyramid, where the first level of that pyramid is the language of watering, so that everyone needs to understand, so we speak a common language, so we don't have half the people speaking Swahili and the other half speaking English, and then someone else over there speaking, Mandarin, and someone else speaking Taiwanese, and someone else speaking Japanese. It's all kind of related, but not really the same. So, you know, we want to make sure that everyone is speaking the same language. But what's also important is not just that you speak the same language, but that you also have the same goals. That's the next level of the pyramid that we're going to talk about. We touched on it last time of, you know, knowing what is the dry target, what's the wet target, which is the next level. You know, how wet do you want to be? Then you want to look at, you know, how is the plant growth, and then finally the climate itself. So really this episode is going to focus on those higher levels, which not everyone needs to know about, because, you know, we touched on the issue of labor in our industry and scalability as we scale up and down through the season. We need a lot of people as we go into the middle of the spring, and then early spring we don't need so many, late spring we don't need. So what do you do with these people? But if we can train them to just go out and water correctly, apply the water, hit the right dry and wet targets, then we can bring just about anyone in, train them very quickly, and be successful. So this episode, I really want to focus on helping you understand how to set the dry targets, the wet targets, how the environment impacts the drying out, because you need to be able to predict, is this going to be dry today Or is this going to be dry tomorrow? Or is it going to be dry 3 days from now? There's a very easy way to predict those values because otherwise we all suffer from what I refer to as PWS, which is paranoid watering syndrome, which when in doubt, you water. So that's kind of what we want to do during this podcast.
Okay, which makes a lot of sense. And I know that, you know, you had talked in the last episode that the training, the language of watering will take about an hour, 30 minutes yep. of looking at the different water levels, 30 minutes of hands-on. That's great. I think that'll help. That helps us sort of get our head around the importance of watering. And you talked a little bit about hitting these, or setting and hitting targets. So when you talk about when and how much to water, this sounds like a huge topic. Can you tell us a little bit about what you mean by that and a little dig into a setting and hitting those targets a little bit more? And then maybe leading up to the fact that each crop probably has its own sort of needs in the greenhouse when it comes to watering.
Well, first of all, Bill, I want to dispel a common belief. You know, as we make growing plants too hard. We make it complicated. We make it seem like you're building a complex warship. When in reality, they're plants. You have some plants like cacti and succulent that they like to be dry. You have plants that sit in water, water lilies. They like to be wet. But the majority of our plants that we deal with, they like to go through a cycle of wet to dry. So let's talk. You know, I think we need to be talking about making sure that plants go through just a normal wet-dry cycle. You know, your question of how do you go and set those targets is kind of an important factor in the whole discussion because it's not that complicated. You know, we talked about the levels 1 through 5, and in the determining the levels 1 through 5, remember that level 5 was saturated. So if you have water plants, you probably want them to be saturated. You have level 1, which is there is no water. Well, clearly no plant survives at level 1. So you probably need to be at least at a level 2 moisture. And then at level 2, there's still water present in the soil, so the plant can survive. And basically that's going to be a critical number, getting it to a level 2. When we take a look at how wet should they be, since you don't want to be at a level 5, you want to take it up to a level 4. So what is a level 4? Well, a level 4 is when there is a drip out of a container, out of a pot, out of a tray. You know, when we talked about establishing the levels 1 through 5, level 5, you put the soil in your hand and water freely drips out of that soil. Level 4 was when you basically had the soil and a little bit of a squeeze caused water to freely start dripping out of it. So, you know, when we think about watering plants, we probably want to water them up to a level 4 so that you just have a drip coming out. That means there's free water that's leaving the soil. And we want to dry them back to a level 2. Now, sounds easy, doesn't it, Bill? I mean, I say dry it down to a level 2 and water it up to a level 4. But the problem is that means something to everybody a little bit differently. So what you really want to go towards is where we go from a qualitative level 1 through 5 to talking about it in a quantitative, put a value to it. So this is where we go and we put a actual number where we say that when the tray is reaching a level 2, which if you take a pot and say you pull the plant out of the pot and you look at the soil and the soil is a light brown, that there's maybe a little bit of darker brown on the bottom, but the top of the pot is light brown. You can basically, if you were to go and squeeze as hard as you can to some of the soil out of the bottom, you should be able to squeeze at least a drop out of there or some water. That's a level 3 on the bottom, but the top would be a level 2. So that will help you understand, okay, we're probably at a point where we need to be watering. So then if you were to weigh that plant, you know that that is the weight that when the water has all been removed from that from the plant or from the soil, so that now it's now time to water. Then when you go and water it back up so that it just drips, so you get one nice drip out of it, that now is, of course, a level four, and you put a weight to that. So that kind of gives you the dry and wet weight. So, of course, Bill, you're sitting there thinking, okay, I can kind of see that. I can understand that. But am I going to be walking around killing plants by popping them out of the pot and pulling them out and squeezing them and everything? Well, no, because what you do is that you will, if you basically, let's use a poinsettia crop, because, of course, we're recording this in December and everyone's thinking about poinsettias. But the same would be true in the spring with a 4-inch caliber koa, is that if you go and you start out from the very beginning when there's not a lot of plant growth on there and weigh it, you know that the soil, the pot, has a specific weight when it's dried down. So that's your level that you know is a level two. Then you water it, and that's a level four. The difference between that is how much water that pot can hold. So if we say that it dried down to, let's just say the pot dried down to 300 grams, and when you watered it, it was up to 500 grams. That means there's 200 grams of water in that pot. So pretty much regardless of whether the plant is ready to sell or the plant was just potted, that soil can hold 200 grams. So what you would do is basically when you went to water, you'd say, okay, well, we added 200 grams. And if you added 200 grams, how much water do you need to lose, Bill?
200 grams to get back exactly down to that level.
Correct. When, of course, as the plant gets bigger and bigger, the top will add more weight. So when you start, it might be you need to dry it down to 300 grams and then water it up to 500 grams. But then fast forward when you go to sell it, it might be that it is basically dried down to, say, 400 grams because it's 200 grams worth of plant on the top. And that means you need to water it up to 700. There we go.
So you have a total difference of 200 between the dry and the wet.
And the wet, right. Because that's how much water is in the pot. Mm. So, you know, think of it in some ways like a bank account. When you put the money in, the money disappears. And then you got to put more money back in, but you can only put so much money in it. The piggy bank only holds so much. So just when we think about what we're trying to do here, that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to basically know that we need to dry it back down to a level two, which we can set a value to. We can make it quantitative. Then you wet it up to water to a specific point, which we know what that is. And then we know that, okay, we have now taken it through the full cycle of 2 through 5 or 2 through 4. Now, from a practical standpoint, let's just talk about that in a second. The most important time in the life of a plant is from the time that you sow, stick, or transplant a plant until you've got roots to the bottom of the container. That's the most critical time. Now, the reason for that is that getting roots to the bottom of the container is your job as a grower. Why do you want roots to the bottom? Well, for a lot of reasons. When you have roots to the bottom of a container, you end up with a pad of roots. Think of it as kind of like a plug of roots at the bottom. So when you pull it out, your customer pulls it out of the cell or out of the pack or out of the pot, what happens is that you can pull it out as a plug, as a block of soil, because you're lifting from the bottom straight up. Can you picture that, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, because the alternative, which is unfortunately what happens, is we water incorrectly and we end up with roots that are just right at the surface and they grow horizontally circling the top. When you pull that out, what you end up with is a spring, because it basically uncoils as you pull it out of the pot, because there's nothing pulling from have any roots in it, and you basically got a bare root plant. You pull it out and you got plant with roots, no soil. So go ahead.
I was gonna say that sort of leads me to two questions, which is, I guess, why not just let roots form at the top of the pot? I mean, they're roots. Or right. Secondly is how growers always talk about optimal root growth. How do they get roots to the bottom of that container?
Well, you know, that's a good question, because when you get spring roots, which is roots that are growing at the top, what happens is roots are growing up there. Why? Well, there's water up there. You know, roots are not particularly aggressive items unless you make them. You got to make roots work. If you just provide nice uniform water just at the top, and that's why we talk about when we water, we want to get a drop out of the bottom during this early stage of development, because we want to draw the roots down through the container. So you want to basically, when you plant it, you sow or you stick a cutting or a plant into a container, the roots are naturally all going to be at the top if you just only water the top. If you go and you put on enough water so that they root out, and then you slowly start at the bottom of the container, and then make sure that you dry it back, because the top will dry out. If the bottom's wet, where are the roots going to go? If the top's dry and the roots and the bottom of the container is wet, which way are the roots going to go?
Straight down to the bottom.
Correct. Yeah. Which is what your job is. If it's all you did was just keep piddling water on the top, they're not going to go, because it's going to be too dry on the bottom. So this is why it's very important. When you look at a container, you have to think about it as a three-dimensional unit. So when you water, you want to draw the roots down through the use of water. Think of it as you're training the root system to grow where you as the grower want it to go. Mm-hmm. So you want to make – and so when you're instructing your watermen, your water people out there, your irrigators, you want to make sure that you're – looking at the containers and seeing, are they putting enough water so that they're drawing the roots down? Conversely, you don't want it so wet. That's why we don't want to go early in development to a level 5 moisture, so that you got a lot of water on the bottom, the perched water table, where you've got this water sitting at the bottom. Because if you've got a lot of water on the bottom, do roots grow into the water? No. These aren't unless you've got water lilies out there. They're not water plants, so you're not going to end up with roots growing into the water. You're going to basically – they need air, because remember, fish grow in water, roots grow in air. So we need to make sure that there's plenty of air there at the bottom of the container so that the roots can then develop.
And that makes sense. You can sort of envision it with the lighter soil at the top, darker soil at the bottom, and that's when you pull that plant out of the pot and you see those white roots going straight down.
Right. And if
water makes sense, you're training.
So if you download the PowerPoint presentation that Bill's going to tell you about where to get it, there's a very nice set of pictures in there that basically show that as you get drier, the more roots you will develop. So it's a real visual. You can get better rooting, especially early on. And I keep stressing this early development. Those first 2-3 weeks after you plant or sow or stick a cutting, they're the most critical in getting a root ball all the way to the bottom. Because once you've got roots to the bottom, just about anyone can water plants. I mean, Bill, you even watered plants, didn't you, at one time in your life?
Absolutely. I've watered them all sorts of different ways, the way the boss wanted us to and the way opportunistic ways that we figured out to be lazy about it. And I still water the plants on my patio.
So. Right. Well, and the reason why you could be successful on your patio is the fact that you've got roots to the bottom of the container. And it's all you have to do is get that container of watering, the watering can, and you just dump it on.
Yep.
Take it up
until it drips out the bottom.
Yeah. And it could drip a lot out the bottom. And that's because the grower who you bought those from developed a root system that went to the bottom of the container. And so that ensures you as a consumer were successful. Now, if they had given you plants that were barely rooted, well, you probably would have failed, because you would have made a sloppy swamp at the bottom of the pot, and the plant would have never rooted down, and then they would dry out, and it would just be a bad situation.
No, that's true, and I've definitely seen that happen too. So I'm going to take maybe just a half step back, and maybe, I don't know if this is a dumb question or just sort of a a question that I try to figure out sometimes. You know, you go into a greenhouse, there's a lot of humidity in a greenhouse when it's closed up, yet they've got to water consistently. So how do these pots and trays lose water, I guess?
Okay, well, you know, if you sit down and think about how do you lose water? Water moves from a high concentration to a low concentration. It moves from wet to dry. That's the way water moves. So you basically have water movement from where it's wet to where it's dry. So if you've got this really high relative humidity in the greenhouse, you're not going to move any water. You know, and water movement is measured from a scientific standpoint as a combination of evaporation plus transpiration. Evaporation is what's coming off of the soil. Transpiration is what's coming off of or out of the plant. So when you have small plants, there's not very much transpiration, but there is a lot of evaporation, a lot of water loss off the soil. So how do you increase water loss? Well, if you have the ability to do a dehumidification cycle. So if you have a fog, you're at 100% relative humidity. There's no water moving. But if you have no fog, you probably could be at a 90, 95%. So there's still 5%, because the relative humidity is a relative amount of water that's in the air. Does that make sense, Bill?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so if you think about it, is if my humidity is 60%, I have 40% more water I can put in the air before it won't move anymore. So what I want to do, if I've got 90% relative humidity, I still got 10%. You know, let's not be looking at half glass half empty. Or half full. Let's look at it as, where's our opportunity? Our opportunity is still to lose water. So how do you get more water loss? You either do a dehumidification cycle, which is you basically turn the heat on, because warm air basically holds more water than cold air. So you put a little bit of heat. We're not talking about taking it up 10 to 15 degrees. You know, 5 degrees might be enough. So you basically add a little bit of heat to the greenhouse, so that you start sucking water out of the container and out of the plant. And then you let that heat rise to the top, hopefully you've got ridge vents. We'll talk about alternatives if you don't. But if you rise it to the ridge vent, because of course we all know heat rises, and then you crack the vent just a little bit. Think of your greenhouse as nothing more than a chimney. You know, when you have a fire in your fireplace and you get a draft, you open up the damper just a little bit, get a little bit of heat going, get that heat rising, and that heat pulls all the smoke up out of the greenhouse. The same thing is happening, well, not out of your greenhouse, out of your fireplace. Think of it as the same thing with your greenhouse. If you have some heat, so it's the heat's rising, that heat is got a lot of water in it, right? Mm-hmm. And then if you put a little bit of a crack in your ridge vent, you're basically going to draw that water out. If you basically open the vent too far, what happens is you get a cold draft come back down, and then you lose the draft. So the whole purpose of this is trying to get a little bit of a draft. So what about those folks in a Quonset greenhouse, Bill? What do? They don't have a ridge vent. Well, you've got an alternative. Is that if you can put on your horizontal airflow fans so that you're moving air over the crop. And of course, the big question is, how do I know that I'm moving air? Well, the flitter, the movement of leaves, is a good indication. Or what I've seen people do is that they've taken just a very fine thread or a string and hang that just above the crop to see, is it moving? You don't have to have, you know, gale force breezes in your greenhouse. Because all you have to do is have a little bit of air movement over the canopy, which will then basically keep that air stirred so that you don't end up with 100% relative humidity at the soil line or at the plant height. Because if you can even have 90% at the soil or at the plant, you will lose water. Because it's all about going from where there's a lot of water, soil and plants, to where there's not very much water, the air surrounding them. So that's how we move water out of the plants. let's get some numbers so that they make sense. If you were to take a pot or container, and you were, we usually use it with a flat, say a plug flat. If we take a plug flat and we measure the water loss overnight, so we measure it at 4 o'clock in the afternoon and then come back again the next morning at 7, 8 o'clock and measure how much water did we lose overnight. If you're losing 200 grams, you are on the money. If you start losing 300, 400, that's a lot of water. Could be a good thing if you're making that decision, but that's a lot of water to be losing overnight. If you are losing 100 grams, you're probably in the ball game. If you're losing 50 grams or less, you're not moving, you're not losing any water. So you need to be looking at that and saying, am I losing enough water at night? Now, why do we worry about water at night? Well, in the spring, Bill, which is longer, the day period or the night period?
Night.
Exactly. So therefore, if you want to say, when do I want to drive the most water loss, you want to drive it at night.
At night.
And when is the time that we normally don't worry about?
Overnight.
Well, overnight. But night is the most critical for water loss. And so we really need to focus on that water loss overnight, because it really helps us basically get the water out of the pots. That's that evaporation plus transpiration equals water loss in the plants. Because remember that water loss within a container is sigmoidal, okay? Big word, everyone's probably heard it, they can't remember. Think of it as basically it is an kind of a curve that starts out fairly slow, then there's a rapid decline, and then it's slowed down again. So it's basically slow, fast, and then slow. So there's a what they call the linear loss. There's the flat at the top, and that would be like at level 5. When you have a perched water table, you're not going to lose very much water because that water is on the bottom of the container where it doesn't expose to air. So it's very hard to get rid of that water. That water has to move from the bottom of the container up to the surface or into the plant and then be moved out of the plant. So if you have water on the bottom, that's hard to get rid of. So that's why we really want to minimize the amount of water that we have in the bottom of the container, which occurs at a level 5. That's very slow water loss. Then there's a very linear water loss, and that linear water loss is all due to the relative humidity. So if you have a low relative humidity, the water loss is very fast, so it drops fast. Growers see that in the summer when all of a sudden they've got a lot of ventilation and a lot of high temperatures and low relative humidity, 40-50% relative humidity, you're losing a lot of water very fast. If you have a very high relative humidity, say January, December, when all of a sudden it's cool, you're not putting a lot of heat in there, and so that what happens is it's very slow, so that the linear phase is very, very long. Mm-hmm. And then when you get down to the dry, it takes a long time to get very, very dry. But so this linear phase is where we're trying to keep the crop. And you can actually see it if you were to go and graph the moisture levels 1 through 5 on the y-axis, and then the weight on the x-axis, basically what you would see is that you dropping down over time is really a function of what is the relative humidity within that greenhouse? How much air movement do you have? We've seen where we've just taken the horizontal airflow fans and dropped them from very high. We have one greenhouse which had 5 meter, about 15 foot gutters, and the fans were at the gutter, and we were losing about 25 grams overnight. We went and we dropped those down 4 feet, and suddenly we went and we started moving 100 grams just because we were moving the air over the plants. So, there's a number of ways that we can increase the water loss, so we can increase the how fast we go from a level 4 down to a level 2. Because that's really, as we talked about the last time, the job is not to water. The job is to dry out. And so this is a tool that you can use, this whole idea of how do we dry these crops out? What tools do we have? Dehumidification cycles, airflow, warming up the greenhouse, purging the greenhouse. There's a number of things we can do to get rid of that water. And that's what the grower's job is. How do I get rid of water? Because if you get rid of water, a lot of good things happen.
Well, and especially during, I mean, what you call this critical time between the planting and the roots sort of driving to the bottom of the pot is really, you know, kind of what we're talking about. It's really where the rubber hits the road is in that root development and creating a ideal root system. How can a grower, I guess, how can you look at that crop or look at that plant when you pull it out of the pot and tell if it has a happy root system, if you're, you know, if you're doing a good job in creating that environment?
Well, if you think about it, a happy root system is a root system that you've trained to grow. So if you've got a well-branched root system, you've got a fuzzy root system, probably the best indicator crop of a happy root is in pansies, violas, because if you keep them dry, the roots are really fuzzy. And what that fuzz is it's the root hairs that are on the surface of the root tip. And as the root tip develops, if it's trying to find water, how does a plant take up water? Well, it increases the surface area of the root system. More root surface, more water uptake. So therefore, a happy root is a lot of roots and a lot of root tips. And so you want to look for fuzzy roots. You want to look for branched roots. You want to look for lots of roots. That's a happy root system because it's basically searching for water. Conversely, if you've got what are called lazy roots, think of them as that teenager laying on the couch waiting for dinner to be served. Anyone that's got teenagers or had them understand that concept. They're just laying around waiting for somebody to do something for them. Those are lazy roots, and they're basically there's not very many of them because everything they need is sitting there right there within arm's reach. There's a lot of water, a lot of fertilizer, a lot of everything they need. So why bother? So that's how we tell whether we've got happy roots. We don't have to do complicated. Just pull the pot out and look. Do you got roots on the bottom of the container? Check, happy roots. If you got roots only halfway down, is that good or is that bad? It's probably bad. If you only got roots wrapping on the surface, you've got trouble because once they start wrapping at the top, it's virtually impossible to get roots to go down because they're going horizontal. They're not going to go vertical.
So if I'm a grower and I pull out a plant and the roots are halfway down or circling on the top, is there still time to save that crop?
It's very tricky. What you have to do is you have to have tough love. And tough love is you have to water them so that you get water to the bottom. You know, you don't want to level 5, but you want to, make sure that you've got a drip out of the bottom. That's level 4. And then you have to control yourself and not water them again until they've dried back to a level 2. How do you know they're a level 2? Well, the surface is going to tan out on you. Mm-hmm. The old statement, I don't want to see any tan plants, I don't want to see any dry plants, basically creates this scenario. You have to let them dry. Okay? That will then force the roots down because you're wet on the bottom and dry on the top. That forces them down. Now, of course, growers then always come up to me and say, but, what about the edges? Well, let's be realistic because we got to be realistic on what's going on. The edges of a bench, the edges of trays, the edges dry out faster than the middle. Now, we've talked about evapotranspiration, airflow, and now, Bill, I think it's probably pretty clear, why do the edges dry out first?
Where the air is flowing the most.
Exactly. So therefore, it only makes sense that you may need to water the edges only. Mm. So it wouldn't be because the big mistake a lot of growers make, especially when I see that they've got a lot of top growth, they've got a lot of those horizontal roots at the top, is because the folks that are watering have been instructed that when you see the edges dry out, water the bench. Mm-hmm. Well, what that means is that the middle of the bench is perpetually at a level 4 or 5, whereas the edges do a very nice, hopefully, 2-4. Mm-hmm. And consequently, you probably have got reasonably good roots on the edge, but you've got absolutely miserable roots in the middle because they go and they're watering the whole bench when they really need to go spot water, edge water. There's a number of different terminologies that we use in the industry to, you know, go around and hit the edges. Mm-hmm. And when you hit the edges, you need to only hit the edges. You know, what a lot of growers end up doing is that they overwater in the sense that they put a, you know, they take a giant nozzle and they've got, you know, just one pot along the edge and they flood out the whole flat.
Right.
You know, walk fast. You know, that's the,
and do the edges.
Do the edges. You know, walk fast. It's kind of, you know, walking fast twice, it's probably better than walking once, because at the end of the day, you want to have all of your waterers pull out their pedometers. That's the right word, right, Bill?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And basically look at those pedometers and basically find out, did they walk 10,000, 15,000, 20,000, 25,000 steps? How many steps is normal? Because they need to be out there walking. That's the job. Walking, mm-hmm. checking, walking, checking, walking, watering, walking, checking. It's not watering, 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 but it's watering and checking and watering and checking. And checking can be done fast, so they could really rack up the steps. So you really need to, from a management standpoint, you need to have a metric, a KPI of what do you expect your employees to be doing. And, you know, because if you set expectations on what they need to be doing, what is the dry target? What's the wet target? Are they recording when they are watering? Okay, I made a watering decision to water today. What was that weight when you made that decision? Put it on a graph. Write it down. When you're done watering, you watered it to a specific weight. Write it down. Then you as management can come back and see, are they hitting the dry targets all the time? Are they hitting the wet targets all the time? How long is it taking to go from a wet target back down to a dry target? And that is very critical. A number, you know, probably the nicest study we've done is where we looked at Gerbera. Gerbera is that crop that everyone is challenged with because it's got gnarl in it. It gets these gnarly leaves and truly ugly plants. What causes gnarly? Well, you know, after, you know, probably 30 years of guessing, I think we finally have got the answer, which I won't bore you with the science of it. It's just really cool. But it basically boils down, took too many days to go from the wet target to the dry target. Simple as that. If you go from wet target to a dry target in 1 day, you'll see no gnarl. 2 days, no gnarl. 3 days, well, maybe. 4 days, pretty much guaranteed for young plants. 5 days from wet to dry, you got gnarl. So it's the days to the dry target. Research that was done many years ago looking at Pythium and carnation, cut flower carnations, showed that if you watered every 5 days, you never saw Pythium problems and Fusarium problems. If you watered every 2 weeks, which was not uncommon in ground beds, you probably saw a pretty good amount of it. If you watered once a month, guaranteed Pythium and Fusarium problems. So days from wet to dry, from the wet target to the dry target, is an important measurement from a management standpoint.
Makes sense. I get that. And I think that most growers that have spent time in a greenhouse have seen some of these challenges that come when there is too long of a period in the drying down stage. So now that makes a lot of sense. So I guess I really only have a couple more questions before we wrap this up. One of them is, do you have a preferred watering method? You know, there's boom watering, hand watering, drip, irrigation. There's all sorts of different ways to get water to the plant. You know, you've been in hundreds, thousands of greenhouses. Do you have a preferred watering method, and is it different between young plants and, you know, growing a finished crop?
You know, you can build a house with a hammer. You know, one method, you can build a house with a hammer, but it sure helps when you got more tools. Mm-hmm. And you use the right tool for the right job. So, you know, I'm a firm believer that every operation has some specific tools that they need and they need to use. You know, from a labor standpoint, boom watering, drip watering, overhead watering, all of those are great watering tools that save a lot of labor, but they have to be tied to pretty intense management. Hand watering is probably one of the best ways and worst ways to water. The best way, because you are personally looking and making decisions as you go. The worst way is if you don't make those decisions, you could have a disaster in short order. So I think that the best method is not, you know, which tool do you use, but it's really in your management strategy of what are you trying to achieve? What are your objectives? Is your objective labor saving? Is your objective more customized treatments? You know, what is the objective you're trying to achieve? And then apply the right tools to that particular objective, to that particular crop, to that particular scenario. Because there isn't, I think, a single right way. But from a management standpoint, it's pretty much, you know, I think, you know, that belief that every plant is different. Not really. Plants are plants. Let's not overthink it. And we just need to use the right tool to achieve the right end result.
Okay, that's great, because I guarantee that the listeners to STEM are growers of all different shapes and sizes with all different watering methods. And so it's really just a matter of looking at the goal, looking at what you want to happen with that plant, and making sure that you have probably multiple tools to get the proper water to that crop.
Right, because I think probably the most shocking thing that I finally discovered one day after starting to implement this water by weight around the world and, you know, having watering described in many different languages using many different tools in phenomenally variety of greenhouses and crops and, you know, just all the different is that a well-run greenhouse with high-quality plants loses 200 grams of water a night.
Okay. It gives a good benchmark.
Yeah, I mean, I it was just like, it just blew me away when we came to this. And then conversely, plant growers that struggled, tip abortion, disease problems, you know, pythium problems, botrytis, and all these problems, these were the folks that were moving 25 to 50 grams of water a night.
Okay.
And it's just like, wow, so many different ways to screw it up. And they all could become, you know, they all start focusing back on a common denominator of, did you move very much water last night? Because that should be the question, not how you doing, but how much water did you lose last night? Should be the question every manager should ask their growers every single day, because that's the behavior you're trying to drive.
That's awesome. So that's a great way to kind of wrap up the second part of our water management topic. We've just really spent a lot of time talking about wet, dry targets and plant demands and climate requirements. Following up on that first episode that really dug into the basics, the language of watering. And I know that our listeners are going to have a lot to think about as they take a close look at this, you know, super critical activity within their greenhouse. So, Dr. Healy, what have we missed? Is there anything else you want to add before we close the books on watering?
Just go out and try. You know, get a scale. Give everybody a scale. And tell them to just go out there and just start weighing it. Because if they start weighing it, they realize their consequences to their behavior. And if they understand the consequences of their behavior, you have a chance of changing the behavior. So I would give everybody a Christmas present of a scale. And tell them, get out there and just weigh the plants and see what's happening.
Excellent advice. And after we wrap this up, I'll, you know, maybe we can get together and find a good scale or two that's easy to order, and I'll put a link to those in the show notes just so that everybody can jump online and grab a scale as a Christmas gift. I love that idea.
Yep.
So I guess last but not least, how can STEM listeners get in touch with you if they have additional questions on the management of the watering process or any specifics related to watering in their operation?
Okay, well, that's I am a traveler, so I travel quite extensively, and so trying to get a hold of me by phone can be really challenging. So the best way to do it is to get hold of me through my email, whealy, W-H-E-A-L-Y, at ballhort.com. And of course, I really encourage you that if you had a question and you don't get an answer within 24 hours, could you please just, you know, give me a little nudge to remind me that your email probably slid off while I was sleeping somewhere on the other side of the world, and that I'll try to get back to it as quickly as I possibly can. So by all means, we're concerned about your success. So basically, send us an email and let's go for it.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Will, I guess, for your willingness to dive deep into this topic. I know it's one that you spend a lot of time working on with growers around the world. And I do appreciate that you've helped our listeners, figure out the strategies to get it right. Because at the end of the day, it's about being more efficient, reducing your costs, but producing the highest quality crop with the happiest roots that we can. So again, thank you so much for spending two full episodes on one topic. But I definitely think that you've given the listeners a ton to think about and a ton of actionable ideas to implement in their operation.
Thanks, Bill.